This week on The Big Show, the holiday season is over, and we'll take a look at the 25 most anticipated films of 2019. We'll also preview the first major award show of the season, the Golden Globes. In addition, we'll meet the DC Filmmaker of the Month. Plus, we'll have movie news with BlackFilm.com's Wilson Morales, all on the latest episode of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. Let's go. Welcome to another edition of The Big Show, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon, the very first episode of 2019. I've been rested after a couple of weeks. Man, I am ready to go. And we have a wonderful show today. For the second week in a row, there are no new movies opening so that we can have more show. No reviews. We'll get back to reviewing full-time next week. But also coming up on today's show, the Golden Globes are this Sunday, and we will have an opportunity to preview that. Charles Kirkland will stop by and join me for that segment. We also are going to look at the 25 most anticipated films of 2019. Let's just get it out the way right now. Jordan Peele's film, Us, we will be discussing that film. That trailer was fire when it dropped over the holidays, so we will definitely talk about that. And we'll also meet the DC Filmmaker of the Month, Caitlin Carroll, whose film, Painted City, has been making the festival circuit. And Wilson Morales will join us momentarily to talk about a historic year for African Americans in film. But before we get to Wilson, a couple of notes. Congratulations to the members of the 106th Congress who was seated today. Lots of history. I'm not even going to talk about some of the folks who were sworn in earlier. Taking care of the people's business here in the nation's capital. So hooray for them. And as a New York Giants fan, happy birthday to my quarterback, Eli Manning, 38 years old. I'm only shouting him out because I don't know if Eli going to be back next year, man. But so we will check that out. And then the other big thing that was just announced on the way in, Taye Diggs will be hosting the Critics' Choice Awards next week. Wow, I got a thumbs down in the behind the glass. I think it's better than Michael Strahan and some of the other people we've had. And to talk about that, this is a great segue into the editor-in-chief of BlackFilm.com, Wilson Morales. How do you feel about Taye Diggs hosting the Critics' Choice Awards this year?
Well, you know, it's keeping it all in the family. One, it's going to be on the CW. He happens to have a show on there, All American, so they wanted to bring in somebody that they work with. You know, he's had stage presence, you know, in terms of, you know, I don't know about hosting an award show, but sometimes, you know, it takes pressure off. You know, when you're a comedian, you know, you have to make people laugh. And when you're somebody like Michael Strahan, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with him, but, you know, he's a football player turned, you know, commentator and so forth. Obviously, he's on GMA. I think if you're just an actor, you know, you're just there to, you know, whatever comes out of you may be a surprise. You know, I think it's a lot more pressure when you're a comedian, you know, trying to do more to, you know, especially when you're on live TV. So I have no problem with Taye Diggs hosting the show.
We're online with Wilson Morales, the man who's a friend of mine and a colleague who will never say anything bad about anybody publicly.
No.
Gotta love that. You didn't think it was...
I want to say you were wrong in terms of there is one movie coming out this week that is new.
What
it's
is that?
Escape Room. You know, stars.
Yeah, so there's no movies
Jay
out this
Ellis.
Weekend.
There is one movie coming out. There's always one movie at the beginning of the year.
Look,
you
Wilson.
Know, it's usually a thriller.
Look, Wilson. Yeah, like I said, there's no movies this weekend, but continue, Wilson.
You know, so there is that one movie. But for the most part, everybody's still into best of, you know, 2018 mode. You know, we're hearing all of these stories as far as what was top 10, what were people's personal top 10, you know, what stood out throughout the year. I made some notes over the last week or so in terms of how great of a year it was within the black cinema. You know, I think it was noted that Hollywood itself grossed about $11.6 billion at the box office, which is a new high. And of that number, 1.3 of 4 came out of the top 10 films that were directed by black filmmakers. Obviously, coming in number one was Ryan Coogler, who directed Black Panther. He's the first, I guess, black filmmaker to have the number one overall box office grossing film of the year. You know, and then you also had some historic marks with five black directors, including Kluger, to have films to gross over $100 million.
That's just telling
the world that, if you give them the opportunity, they can deliver. You know, it doesn't always work out for everybody, but you had Ryan Coogler, you had Stephen Caple Jr., you had Peter Ramsey, who's one of the co-directors of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, you had Antoine Fuqua, who successfully... did well with the sequel to Equalizer 2, and you had Ava DuVernay, who became the first filmmaker to not only have a $100 million film to make, but it grossed a $100 million movie. You have an asterisk in terms of, like, it didn't do well overall in terms of financially, but nevertheless, it still crossed $100 million. Anytime a movie hits $100 million, that's repeat business. You know, so that says, people are coming in to see the movie, just not in the masses that the studio wanted compared to how much it cost.
So, Wilson, here's my question for you. Of course, money moves everything in Hollywood. What do you think the long-term ramifications of what occurred in 2018, excuse me, will that plant the seeds for 2020, 2021, for more filmmakers of color and specifically African-American filmmakers to get more opportunities from studios for these huge, big budget films?
You know, it's interesting you mentioned 2021 as opposed to 2019, because these things come in cycles. You know, we always talk about, I remember 2013 when we had The Butler and 12 Years a Slave and Fruitvale Station, quality films. Not in quantity. This particular past year, 2018, we had quality and quantity. So at the end of the day, this is a money-making business. So when you have certain films directed by black talent that does well at the box office, that just tells producers, let's keep up, let's keep this up. We still need to add more female filmmakers to the equation. Ava can't be the only one, I think in 2021, hopefully we'll see more rise. It all depends on the studio and what their mantra is. Sometimes, when you have Disney running away at the bank, with their Marvel movies and their Pixar movies, everybody else is trying to play catch up. And when you're trying to play catch up, you're not greenlighting these small films that can make attention. You're trying to play catch up by trying to greenlight a franchise film in the hopes of, it making at least $500 million overall, so you can not be so far behind Disney's $4 billion a year growth.
Right. Well, we've got a couple of filmmakers on the horizon, and we're going to talk more about them and our anticipated films of 2019 in Dee Rees and Melina Matsoukas. Now, people know Dee Rees because you've watched Mudbound and Pariah. A lot of people do not know Melina Matsoukas is probably like an executive behind the scenes at Insecure. She's worked with Beyonce and done some videos. She's got her film debut coming out later on this year. So I'm absolutely with you, Wilson, that we've got to cultivate and build up more African-American women. Lena Waithe, I think, is also going to be up next in order to making that move into feature film as well. So I think, to answer the question that I asked you, I think it will bear some dividends because it will give more, it'll give studios less pause moving forward that, yeah, we should just give them an opportunity because we want to find the next Stephen Caple, the next Barry Jenkins, the next this, the next that. So I would love to see some more stories told from a female point of view, man, in Hollywood on a big budget stage.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you want the opportunity, but you also have to have the audience to come out and see it. Ava's gotten the opportunity. She definitely had the marketing. And although it made $100 million, not enough people came out to see it, for it to be a truly successful film. So, the one thing we want first and foremost is the opportunity. You know, that's what they want. At least if they're in the conversation, then we can talk about, like, okay, well, is it good or not? But they have to be part of the conversation. You know, so, like, that's what the hope is that, you know, producers are out there, not just female directors, female leads in big studio movies. At the end of the year, you know, one of the things I talked about was, although we had a lot of black female leads in films, they are not being, there are, a lot of them are not part of the conversation as we're talking about, you know, best of or top five females that are being considered for an Oscar. So that's another work in progress that we need to have, is having more black females or people of color in these lead roles to be part of the conversation that, you know, when we're talking about who's up in the race for a Golden Globe or a SAG or an Oscar nomination, that we're looking at just more than one. It can't be just one person in the race and we're all putting our chips on that person. It's got to be, you know, three or four of them that we can debate, like, who's better than who.
Right. Well, the interesting thing is, I've heard this debate, but the other flip side is that Mahershala Ali and Regina King have been dominant in awards. I mean, in what do you call it? The critics groups leading up to the Golden Globes. And I know Regina is odds on Sunday to win a Golden Globe. So you're right. I think, though, in addition to saying we have to have more, Wilson, you've got to have more quality. Because outside of Viola Davis, Regina Hall, and Regina King, I'm not sure who else is in that female space that we would even put up this year, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, no one else. You know, I think it's you know, you have to be in the equation. You have to be in a position where there are masses of people, or the right people. You know, I live in New York, you live in D.C., you know, we're living in major markets where we're in a position to see a lot of these movies, but not everybody else is.
Right.
So some of these movies are not being played in the West, I guess in the Midwest regions or certain regional states where, you know, they can be part of the conversation. You know, so, like, obviously Viola Davis was in Widows. Regina
right.
Hall was seen by the right people to have her be nominated for a Gotham Spirit Award, to win the New York Film Critics Circle Award and be nominated for Independent Spirit Award. And it's now playing on Hulu, for hopefully those who have it can see it. And then, you know, like I said, you know, it can't be just three people. You know, we get 400 films a year.
Right.
You know, they tell me there's five or at least six, then we can decide, okay, who's better than who, but it just can't be just three people. We're willing to put all our chips into that one person. When they don't get nominated, then we go to social media to say, oh, this person was snubbed or so.
Right. All right, Wilson, we got a couple of seconds left, man. Tell people, man, or let them know where they can follow you.
You can follow me over at blackfilm.com, which is the same word you use for social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
All right, my brother. We definitely will be in touch, man, because we got to talk Sundance. We got to talk Critics' Choice, which both you and I will be at next week. But as always, man, keep your head down, man, and keep on, you know, doing your thing at blackfilm.com. You wrote a bunch of really good pieces over the holiday, man.
Appreciate just keeping people informed.
All right, so, brother, you take care, man.
Take care.
All right. And, of course, that is Wilson Morales, editor-in-chief of blackfilm.com. He joins us at the top of every show. We're about to go to break right now, but before we go, President Barack Obama put out his list of his favorite songs, books, and movies about a week ago. So all the music on today's show are all songs that were curated by President Barack Obama. Thank you, 44. You guys are listening to The Big Show, keeping it real with Film Gordon. We'll be right back.
Slip me a Zanny at once. I got the earth and the blunt. I get the skirt when I want. I get the skirt when I want. Due to the money aroma. My girl, she got a diploma. She got white written all over. She got white written all over. All you know is how a good thing up. Run from the pain, sip lean, smoke tree up. When I'm in your town, press pound, hit me up. When I'm in your town, press pound, hit me up. Only if you down.
All right, and welcome back to the show. And man, I'm sitting here with Charles Kirkland, man, who is a show contributor as well as the social producer of our show. Before we get into this, man, Kevin's Heart, man. How amazing is that J. Cole is able to record a song
called
About Kevin Hart, and get Kevin Hart in the video.
It's perfect direction.
Wow, you know,
casting is awesome.
I got man, kudos and props.
J. Cole got money. He can do that.
To have him in a video about
love,
him
baby.
Cheating and have him. Wow, man, big props to Kevin Hart for that one. But welcome back to the show. Coming up a little later on in our next segment, we're going to preview the Golden Globes, which are going to air on Sunday night, and we'll also later on meet the DC Filmmaker of the Month. But without any further ado, Charles Kirkland and I have been apart for about the last 2 weeks because we were on our filmmaker winter break, is like what I call it.
Essentially.
So the season, the holiday season is over. We've done, wrapped up top tens. We've put 2018 in our rear view. It is now time for us to move to 2019. And I have picked out the 25 most anticipated films of 2019. And as we go through these, man, we'll just have a little commentary because we got a lot of films to cover. All righty, so now I know it's January. You know, we're in early January right now. Star Wars Episode 9. They've already got this on the calendar for December the 20th. And this is written by J.J. Abrams along with Chris Terrio, directed by J.J. Abrams. They bring back Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver, John Boyega, you know, Oscar Isaac, Lupita Nyong'o. The whole crew is back. Solo stumbled a little bit.
Yes.
There was mixed reaction to Episode 8. What are you thinking for Episode 9? I'm not the Star Wars guy. You're much more of a Star Wars guy than I am.
Which is why I'm surprised that you even see this on your list. I know you recognize it as a major film, but I don't know if you were anticipating it as much as I am. This has got to be the culmination. I can't imagine this movie being any more, any less than 3 hours long, because you got a lot of stuff that you got to put to bed here. Otherwise, there'll be so many conspiracy theories and theories about another trilogy after this one. So you got a lot to put to bed, and it's amazing to me that even at this point in time, we have no idea whatsoever what's going to happen in this movie.
No, absolutely not. So, okay, I just want to make sure we anticipate this movie. I really am. I mean, I just want to make sure we acknowledge it, because any Star Wars movie or any movie coming out of that branch of that branch of Disney is a huge movie. Star Wars is a cultural event. And speaking of cultural events, Avengers Endgame. I have to tell you, from a standpoint of that genre, that's got to be, if it's not movie 2 or 3, that's got to be in the top 3 of the most anticipated films. Marvel brings the 10th anniversary and this whole arc to an end, where you're going to lose some characters. I predict this is going to be a very emotional journey, as the contracts for Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr., Thor, Chris Hemsworth, Captain America,
Chris Evans,
mm-hmm. and the Hulk,
Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo's
Ruffalo.
Contracts are all up, which means that if they're all up, I'm gonna leave it dangling. Charles, what do you got on this?
It's they're out. I think that's it. This is the end for. It's a whole new phase that's going to start. So everything's going to change. And so we already have our new characters that we got. We got Black Panther. We're going to have Captain Marvel that's coming out.
You got one more Guardians film. Yeah, man.
But it's going to be a whole new roster. And I think Hawkeye may be the leader. Who knows?
Man, I feel the tears already. There's going to be a lot of them shed in the theater that day, man, when we see the screening for that film.
How about all the stuff that's been going around about Hugh Jackman going to be in Game? Have you seen the craziness that's going on?
I heard something about this a year ago when he was on set. And I said, but at the time, you remember, the sale between Disney and Fox hadn't gone through, which is the other aspect which makes this so intriguing, because there could be some crossover possibilities that people's head would just explode like.
I'm getting goosebumps.
We're 4 months away from that one, but the movie that's coming out in 2 months that we've got to talk about is Us. Man, I saw the first time I saw this trailer, Charles, let me tell you exactly what my reaction was. I said, when he said, we are our own worst enemy, I said, man, this guy is brilliant. Because, again, he infuses you know, the experience of being black in America, and he takes that horror and turns it into horror films, or uses it as a basis for these films, which I think is the smartest thing ever.
I mean, intelligent psychological horror is the best way to describe what he does. And just to parallel this, we watched Hereditary again the other night.
Why?
Because
why?
Because I wanted them to see this film that everyone is talking so lavishly and praising so much, and I said, this is so the lens through which this film comes through.
Oh, I see
so,
what you're saying. Yeah,
we need the African American experience in horror, and this is what I'm looking forward to with Jordan Peele's this new movie. It looks outstanding.
He is hit on something that I don't think anybody's ever thought of before. Right. I mean, you know, we've had Candyman and we've had African Americans in horror films, but he takes the absolute cultural and societal horror
right.
of what it means to be us. And then Get Out is a perfect example.
Perfect.
It's like, you know, the thing that we always, when I say we, meaning people of color, have always thought about, you know, what do liberal whites really think? Man, I'd vote for Obama for a third term before I take half a piece of your skull off.
Right.
But anyway, Jordan Peele, this movie's dropping on March the 15th. We will see it much earlier than that. Cannot wait. Now, here's another surprise for you. Spider-Man Far From Home is out in theaters in July.
Right.
Endgame is out in April. Spider-Man was gone in
Infinity War.
Infinity War, thank you. So apparently he's back.
He's back.
You really can't surprise people on, like, oh man, that character might be gone. No, his next movie's coming out on July the 5th.
Well,
Spider-Man will be back.
In fairness, I'll say this. We don't know where Spider-Man Far From Home falls in the timeline. This could happen before the things that happened in Infinity War, so we never know. Just like Captain America happens long. I mean, Captain Marvel happens
long before
Infinity War.
Right,
so we don't know, really know. I mean, we're all assuming that means Spider-Man will be back, but it's all assumptions.
All right, May 17th, man. John Wick Chapter 3. Halle Berry's in this one.
Yes,
Halle Berry. Yes. Now that might mean officially that this movie's gonna suck.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Really?
Don't do that.
Do you want me to start rattling off Halle Berry movies recently? Frankie and Alice. Gothica.
What was that one with Daniel Craig just last year?
Kings. That made my top 10 for the worst movie of the year. Man, Halle Berry do not mess up John Wick, man. John Wick is doing well.
She can't mess it up. She can't mess it up.
All right, man.
John Wick's revived Keanu Reeves' career, so it can do something for Halle Berry. I'm being positive.
From your lips to God's ears, man. Halle, don't mess up the movie, man. You're a beautiful woman. And I know Team Halle, who I got some friends, they're going to be mad at me. But, yo.
I'm on the team.
Come on, Halle. All righty. So, up next, March 7th, Captain Marvel. We just talked about her. I think this film is going. I'm banking that it's going to be good because Marvel has a formula that they make these movies. It's hard to mess up a Marvel movie, man. It really is at this point. They've got such a blueprint, and it's on cruise control. So I'm expecting that Captain Marvel's going to knock it out of the park, and it will vault her into Endgame, where I'm assuming that she's going to have a huge role in that as well.
Obviously, and this is Marvel's first female superhero, so you know they're jumping in the pool maybe 2 years after
Wonder Woman, right?
So they can't allow DC to one up them. So I'm pretty sure that this is going to be on point.
All right, this next movie, man, I'm feeling some kind of way as well as M. Night Shyamalan, a dude I've been killing for years. I loved what was his first film? Bruce Willis.
I See Dead People. You know.
Oh my God! What was the name of that movie?
That's Signs. What was the name of that movie? Oh well.
God, I'm having a brain fart here. I really apologize, but whatever his first movie was, I thought it was great. His second movie was Unbreakable. Unbreakable is the first of a 3-part trilogy with Split, and now you have Glass, which is getting a lot of advanced buzz that people are really loving this film. Charles, while I'm figuring this out, can you look up what the name of M. Night Shyamalan's first movie is?
I see dead people. Yeah. It's so sad. So sad. You can't remember that. That's how long ago that movie was. So, Glass, as I said, the third part of this trilogy reunites Bruce Willis, James McAvoy from Split, along with Samuel L. Jackson. Sarah Paulson is their therapist. This is going to be really, really interesting. I think I'm looking forward to this. What is it called?
The Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense. My God. I don't feel bad because you couldn't figure it out either.
I couldn't think of it either.
So The Sixth Sense is probably like his Citizen Kane. And then after that, it just...
Well, here's well, you know what my problem automatically is, because it's being released January 18th.
And that's never a good sign.
That's never a good sign. I mean, I'm excited as just anybody else was, because when we had Unbreakable and all these things worked together, I was excited.
Right.
But the release date scares me.
Oh, yeah. So, and it should.
Because it's usually January is usually a dumping ground. Now, we talked in the past about how things are changing in Hollywood, but I think this is one thing that's staying the same. January is still a dumping ground for movies, and that's why people keep talking to me about The Upside, the Kevin Hart's film. I said, there's two things about that. First, it was made in 2017 and finally got released in 2019, and then it was released in January.
And it was made 4 years ago, and it was great, and it wasn't needed to be remade. So here's the next film we want to talk about. F. Gary Gray, you just had Wilson on last segment, talking about African-American directors. F. Gary Gray was quiet last year, and he was quiet because he has Men in Black International coming out. Not a sequel, not a prequel, but just kind of a spinoff and the next part of the story. The thing about this movie that jumps out to me is an actress by the name of Tessa Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Tessa Thompson has got to be one of the most diverse and multifaceted actors working in the business today. I saw Tessa, you were with me at Middleburg a couple months ago.
Yes.
We saw a little movie called Little Woods, right, where Tessa Thompson mm-hmm. played an indie. Mm-hmm. She's played Valkyrie in Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
She played Detroit in another indie, Sorry to Bother You. Tessa Thompson can literally play anything.
She does everything.
She was in Creed. I mean, this woman can play big budget, small. I don't hear what Jessica. Jessica's mouthing.
Westworld.
What? Oh, yeah. I mean, Tessa Thompson, and I've met her. She is a cutie patootie. She is something special. Look. I'll show you the picture later. She's really special.
Okay.
She is multifaceted, multi-talented. I love the fact that she's almost like cinematic Play-Doh. You can stick her anywhere, and she's going to be effective. She's never out of place on screen.
Well, you and Wilson were talking last segment about African-American actresses that need to get out there, and she's one of them, man. Her, Taraji P., Yara Shahidi.
Well, Taraji P. Henson makes bad movies.
Taraji needs somebody to help her.
What?
She does.
The show is called Keeping It Real. What do you want from me?
She has the ability, though. She just needs somebody that's going to steer
She got this movie coming out in February. I think it's next month, What Men Want. So hopefully that will work better than Acrimony and Proud Mary.
Mm-mm.
And I'll leave it there. Also,
I'm looking for The Best of Enemies to resurrect her career. That's the one with her and Sam Rockwell Brown versus Board of Education fight.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, Taraji is pretty good in dramas. She was really good in Hidden
mm-hmm.
Figures.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, but look, last year. Ugh.
Yeah.
All right.
She had a bad year last year.
Now, the other movie where I think you're going to see a lot of attention is The Lion King on July the 19th. Here's the live-action version of that smash Disney hit. Donald Glover, Beyoncé Knowles, Carter, James Earl Jones, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Alfie Woodard.
And on and on, man.
I mean, I think Lion King, because understanding how Disney works, man. But the Lion King, it's going to be hard to mess up the Lion King.
Well, you already bringing James Earl Jones' voice back, so you're already guaranteeing success.
I couldn't
success,
even do it. I can't go that low.
But I think it's interesting also how many Disney movies you've had in this list so far.
Oh, yeah, which means that the next one is Toy Story. Toy Story 4. Hey, man. Yeah, man, there's a reason. I mean, you heard Wilson in the last segment say that Disney made $5 billion at the box office last year. There's a reason why. Watch this. You own Pixar, you own Marvel, and you own Lucasfilms. Every one of the films that comes out of those properties are all moneymakers, man. Marvel has gotten to the point with every film now that it's like $1 billion is the expectation worldwide for their movies. Star Wars, like this next one that's coming out, we talked earlier about Episode 9, that's a $1 billion film.
Absolutely.
Lion King? Look, absolutely. Lion King?
Absolutely.
Oh my God. Come on, man. So Toy Story 4? Now, I don't know what you do with Toy Story 4 because 3 was so emotional with the arc of... You know,
and he really kind of thought it came to a conclusion that it was over. And now I guess they're going back to the well. Disney decided they need to make more money and they're bringing in a new character called Forky.
Okay, so hold on a second. Woody has always been confident about his place in the world and his prior is taking care of kids, whether it's Andy or Bonnie. But when Bonnie adds a reluctant new toy called Forky to her room, a road trip adventure alongside old and new friends will show Woody how big the world can be for a toy. So what it sounds like to me, honestly, is that they're starting a new trilogy. So they're going to have Toy Story 4, 5, and then 6 will... people will cry again. Because kids were crying at Toy Story 3.
6 will be when Bonnie's grown up and she passes Woody on to the next person.
Right, 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 right.
Disney not giving up that money, man.
Oh, no, no. Now, the next movie, which is ironic, because I know Jessica will love this. This was a 20th Century Fox movie, which now becomes a Disney property, because as of May 1st, the sale goes through, is X-Men Dark Phoenix. I don't know what you do, man. These movies are all going to work, man. Jennifer Lawrence, Ty Sheridan, they're bringing back the X-Men again. And if this movie works... You're talking about the money well starting to expand. You're now including the X-Men Fantastic Four, but X-Men is huge because X-Men is a part of that whole Avengers universe as well, right?
They should be. They could have been because of the separation, but now that it's all together, who knows?
Hey, man, we got to replace Iron Man, Captain America,
Wolverine,
Hulk, and Thor.
Wolverine is now an Avenger.
Oh, my God. So June the 7th, X-Men Dark Phoenix, and on August 2nd, the New Mutants.
Okay,
Marvel Entertainment.
I'm excited about New Mutants, but I've been excited about New Mutants for over a year because that was supposed to come out last year, and it got pushed back a whole year. So hopefully whatever was wrong with it, they fixed, because I need to see my X-Men and New Mutants, and my X-Men and my New Mutants. Dark Phoenix is one of my favorite storylines in the comics anyway.
Right.
And then they go back to the old school New Mutants from when they were first in the insane asylum. I'm excited. I've been excited. Can we just get them out now?
All right, so here's Jessica's dilemma. While the New Mutants are on August the 2nd, Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw the same day. No, you're shaking your head. This is actually genius. This is The Rock and Jason Statham teaming up in a Fast and Furious spinoff. Oh, this is going to be huge. The Rock, Jessica's not impressed. The Rock literally invigorated this franchise in a way when he came in and was this Fast and Furious 6?
One of them. There's too many of them to count.
This was the one that was in Brazil when he faced off against Vin Diesel. Right. So it was 6 is the one that I really think that kind of turned that franchise around and made it like an international sensation. I really think it was. But I honestly believe that this is going to be a huge film, which is why I made my list. Along with this next film that we're going to talk about, Aladdin. They're doing a live action version of Aladdin again from Disney. Will Smith plays Aladdin. Anybody. Jessica, anybody. Will Smith is Will Aladdin. Smith. You know, complete as the genie.
Okay,
so he has the haircut, the little...
You know, Robin Williams has passed, so, you know, these are big shoes, literally, that Will Smith is stepping into, and...
But he's Will Smith. Will Smith was way bigger than Robin Williams as a box office presence.
True, but
not as an actor.
Not as a comedian.
No.
So I'm saying these are big shoes for Will to fill. So
May 24th, Aladdin, Will Smith.
I'm you know, Will hasn't done too many blockbusters lately. Either.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he hasn't had any block offs or bombs, because I was waiting to say After Earth, baby.
Okay.
All right, Kingsman 3, November the 8th. like the Kingsman story. Have you never seen Kingsman? Kingsman's pretty good. I'm looking forward to this one. This one is hot.
This one's going to be different because Eggsy's not in it. So it's going to be a whole new storyline, and supposedly in the past or something like that. So,
oh, yeah, this is the prequel. This is
so
the prequel.
It's a prequel to the original Kingsman without Eggsy. So.
Oh. And speaking of Disney getting paid and getting money, Frozen 2 is coming out on November the 22nd. So if Disney made $5 billion this year, I'd put the over-under on Disney at about seven, eight. Because they're releasing, they're going into the vaults, and you got Lion King, Frozen,
Aladdin.
Oh yeah, man! All these movies,
Star Wars,
Disney is like two. Disney is like that Marvel girl movies. In Florida who was punching that guy. It's just the hits keep coming. They just keep
overhand. Take this one.
Jessica's cringing. All right, October 4th. Ang Lee is back with Gemini Man, starring
Will Smith.
Oh yeah, you didn't get enough Will the first time in the summer. There's more Will in the fall. All right, so we got about less than a minute to go. Rocket Man, the Elton John story looks really, really good. And then there's Ford v Ferrari, which I put that on the list because Christian Bale and Matt Damon are going to square off. So I think that's going to be good. And then we got a whole bunch of other smaller movies, man, including Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's movie, which drops on August the 9th. Mm-hmm. Listen to the cast of this movie. Margot Robbie, Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, Al Pacino, Kurt Russell, Dakota Fanning, and on and on and on. Put your money that's going to be an Oscar movie for next year. Mm-hmm. Trust me, that will be an Oscar movie.
I agree.
All right, so I'm going to get out of here, and I'm going to publish this list so that you guys can check it out. Our most anticipated films of 2019. You guys keep it where you got it. When we come back on the other side, it's going to be time to look at the first major award show of the season. The Golden Globes are this Sunday night. Me and Charles are going to chop it up in our special, special way. You guys keep it where you got it. You're listening to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon here at 96.3 HD4. And we'll be right back.
Hi, this is John David Washington, and you're listening to The Big Show. Keep It Real with Film Gordon on Film Gordon Radio.
You never get enough of probably one of my favorite artists of all time, the purple one, Prince, of course. And that was off of Barack Obama's favorite songs of the year. And that's Mary Don't Weep from the Final Piano with a Microphone tour. All righty. And welcome back to our show. Charles Kirkland is still riding shotgun with me, man. But let's talk Golden Globes, man. And so let's see. I want to look at the major categories, man, the big six, right?
Okay, all right.
Now, I went and did some research, and I found a site that had them as odds. So we'll ignore the odds, but we'll just talk about the category. The Globes, of course, split them into drama and musical comedy categories. So for Best Picture Drama, the nominees on Sunday, of course, are A Star Is Born,
which is a musical. I don't know how they
that, man. Watch this.
Okay, go ahead.
This is the Hollywood Foreign Press, man. Some of this stuff is not going to make any sense, okay, man. Just go with it.
Yeah.
A Star Is Born, which, like you said, is a musical. If Beale Street Can Talk, Black Klansman, Black Panther, and Bohemian Rhapsody, another musical. Now, again, don't think of the Golden Globes with your American mind on what you think would be best, but think about the things that, you know, the Hollywood Foreign Press, so films that play well outside the United States. Does that make any sense?
That makes a lot of sense, yes.
Now, and they like star power at the Globes.
Oh, yeah.
If I look through this category, I would have to agree with these odds that I think A Star Is Born definitely takes home this category. But I don't think it's the best picture in this category, but I think it's the one that will win.
Obviously, I would say If Beale Street Could Talk would be the best picture in the category. However, for voting purposes, I would have gone with A Star Is Born as well, which I did think was the number one movie of the year. And of course, it's hot. It's foreign press, so there's no Black Panther didn't screen well around the world. It did most of its money here, so
right.
You know, it's not going to be the winner in that category. I agree with you. A Star Is Born looks like the winner of that category.
Well, Rhapsody is also a film that was made that features someone from outside the United States,
right,
as
right.
well. But yeah, I think the combination of Lady Gaga, who's hugely international, Bradley Cooper, who has a great international presence. I think the story is a story that people are familiar with. So I honestly do believe that not only will A Star Is Born win this, but I think A Star Is Born is going to win multiple awards on Sunday night, and we'll dive right into that. So
okay.
We both have checked off A Star Is Born is probably the one that's going to win on Sunday. All right, now in the Best Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy, the nominees, of course, are Green Book, The Favorite, Vice, Mary Poppins Returns, and Crazy Rich Asians. Now, this category is interesting, right? Now, on the surface, yeah. A movie like The Favorite, I think, checks a lot of the boxes for the Hollywood foreign press. It's a movie in England about the monarchy.
Right.
I think the only kind of slight about this movie is that it's a story that is a little polarizing, right? I think it's good.
Yeah.
But
yes.
I don't think it's a slam dunk much in the way we talked about either Beale Street or A Star Is Born.
Right.
Right? Now, Green Book has been weathering the storm and it's been laying low. You know, Mahershala Ali, we talked a couple weeks ago that he had to apologize to the family because they said that the film, and I'm paraphrasing, they said it was a symphony of lies.
Mm.
You had Viggo Mortensen with the impromptu N-word letting it out at a Q&A.
Yeah.
Now you also look at Vice. Vice is a film that I don't really think travels well because it's about an American vice president, and I don't know how popular Dick Cheney is, and I'm assuming not that.
Or well-known.
Well, right.
States
well,
either.
No, I think he was known. I just don't think he was popular.
Right.
Mary Poppins Returns, I think, is another one. That's pretty
Emily,
interesting.
Emily Blunt, you know, she's an
Emily
English
Blunt.
Actress, and, you know, people may support her.
And Crazy Rich Asians, another film that did amazingly well.
And I'm really community. Surprised at the odds that this, whatever site you got this from, put on Crazy Rich Asians, because I would have thought it would have been a little bit higher. I thought it would be more popular than either Vice or Mary Poppins Returns as far as this category goes.
This is tough, man. What I will say is that the odds here say that it's Green Book, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Sunday night is a test about Green Book, and we'll see 2 weeks in a row of tests for this film. The Golden Globes, of course, are this Sunday. The following Sunday are the Critics' Choice Awards.
Right.
And I want to see how well Green Book does, because I think that will be a barometer to let us know with the Academy Awards how this film will fare, because people talk. And a lot of these people that are voters also are voters for those awards as well. So I don't know. I mean, I personally would think The Favorite is the favorite in this category.
And,
to me.
And I would agree with you, because the press outside of the United States, they don't always have to have that happy, feel-good ending that the Green Book delivers. And
right.
The Favorite doesn't. It's a more controversial. It's a more introspective, I guess. So I'm inclined to think that The Favorite is going to pull out the win.
Man, you see it says here at the bottom, the bet is The Favorite. So I didn't even see that until I scrolled up, but yes,
oh, yeah,
The Favorite.
Oh, yeah, I see that now.
All right, so this next category, that's kind of a slam dunk. This is pretty easy. Best actor in a motion picture. I mean, it is. I mean, you look at the you look at the nominees. It's only one person that really jumps out that the Hollywood foreign press is going to vote for. The nominees for best actor in a motion picture drama are Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born, Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody, Willem Dafoe for Eternity's Gate, John David Washington, Black Klansman, Lucas Hedges, Boy Erased. My God, if Bradley Cooper doesn't win this,
I thought you were going to say John David Washington.
No, I like John David Washington, but now maybe if I said Denzel Washington,
maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
But John David Washington, nah.
No, it's a knock for Bradley, I think.
Yeah, Bradley Cooper's easy, so we don't even have to go into that one because that's kind of a slam dunk. Best actor in a motion picture, musical, or comedy, Christian Bale for Vice, Viggo Mortensen, Green Book, Robert Redford, The Old Man and the Gun, John C. Reilly, Stan and Ollie, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Mary Poppins. This one is as easy as the last category.
Yeah.
If Christian Bale can't take this home, Christian Bale and Bradley Cooper are going to battle for the Best Actor Oscar. At this point, if I had a vote, honestly, I'd give it to Christian Bale.
I know you would give it to Christian Bale.
I mean, I thought that performance in Vice. Now, not to say or knock Bradley Cooper, because I thought Bradley Cooper was really good, but I think that the levels and what Bale has to do is more than what you're asking Cooper to do. And I think Cooper's movie is more about Lady Gaga's character than I think it's about his character.
I kind of disagree, because I got into this, not in who should win,
right?
But I think that Jackson Maine is the more central character in A Star Is Born than Lady Gaga's character. But what you're saying, and I agree with, is that there's freedom in the role that he played in A Star Is Born. He could be whatever he had to wanted to be. But with Christian Bale's character, everybody knows what Dick Cheney looks like, what he sounded like, and for Christian Bale to get that spot on like he did,
and I'm talking about not just spot on with older Dick Cheney, but he's doing younger Dick Cheney. He's all the Dick Cheneys in there.
Right.
Yeah. So
I tend to agree with you. I think Christian Bale should be the winner in this category.
All right. Our next category is Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama. Now this is tough. Lady Gaga from A Star Is Born, Glenn Close from The Wife, Nicole Kidman from Destroyer, Melissa McCarthy, Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Rosamund Pike for A Private War. Now, this is a category that if this was the Oscars, this is tough.
Yeah.
But if it's the Golden Globes, it's pretty simple.
Yeah,
the Golden Globes wants star power.
And Lady
Who's
Gaga.
The biggest star in that category?
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
And I think,
I'm just saying.
I think Glenn Close is also at fault for her movie being released so early in the year as well, because that performance that she put in that movie is outstanding. And like you said, when we get to Oscar time, she's going to get a lot more votes than Lady Gaga would have gotten.
Let me tell you something, man. We talked a couple of weeks ago. I think I forget who we had on that talked about it was Clayton Davis from Award Circuit,
right?
And we talked about how this year that the actress field is like loaded.
Mm-hmm.
There's 17 women that you can make a case that should be nominated this year. And so this is an example. And so we go with Lady Gaga for Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama. Same thing for Best Actress in a Motion Picture Musical or Comedy. The woman who I think has the best chance to win an Oscar is in this category, and that's Olivia Colman from The Favourite, Emily Blunt for Mary Poppins Returns, Charlize Theron for Tully, Constance Wu for Crazy Rich Asians, and Elise Fisher for Eighth Grade. Now, out of these 10 names we just named, like these five in this category and five in the previous, those are your nominees are coming out of that.
For the Oscar, yeah.
For the Oscars are coming out of that category, man. So it is crazy that in this category, I honestly believe that if I believe that The Favorite is going to have a shot to win Best Picture, I'm definitely going with Olivia Colman here.
Yeah.
Olivia Colman, I think, is going to win the Oscar this year. They're saying that their odds on Favorite is that it's going to be Emily Blunt, which sort of kind of makes sense.
I mean, because Mary Poppins Returns is not that great of a movie. The only thing that rescues that movie
is Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt. And she totally deserves the nomination, and I wouldn't be upset if she won. I wouldn't be.
All right, so we're going to do this last category last. Best Supporting Actor in a Motion Picture, Mahershala Ali for Green Book, Richard E. Grant, Can You Ever Forgive Me, Timothée Chalamet for Beautiful Boy, Adam Driver for BlacKkKlansman, and Sam Rockwell for Vice. I personally think that Mahershala Ali should win. I don't know if he will win on Sunday, but I think he will win barring anything crazy happening, he's definitely given the best supporting performance to me of all these guys in this category.
It's Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, man.
He's the wild card in this field because, again, the foreign press doesn't always need the happy ending like we spoke, like I said
right,
before.
Right, right.
And Beautiful Boy is one of those tortured dramas, mm-hmm. and he's already been recognized once before for something for this kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the wild card. I want Ali to win. I want him to win, but I wouldn't be surprised if Chalamet comes out with it.
All right, man. Let's quickly go through best supporting actress in any motion picture. The big favorite is Regina King if Beale Street Can Talk. Amy Adams with Vice, Emma Stone for The Favorite, Claire Foy for The First Man, and Rachel Weisz for The Favorite. I think it's a slam dunk for Regina King. They disagree with me and say that they think Rachel Weisz will come ahead, and I'm like, hey, man, now that would
that's
be a shock.
That's a dark comedy.
That's no pun intended.
A dark comedy.
Yes. Yeah, man.
This would be a dark surprise for her to come forward.
I think Regina King is a slam dunk in almost every category. I mean, every award show is this season. And quickly, man, let's pivot to best director for Alfonso Cuarón for Roma. Bradley Cooper, A Star Is Born, Adam McKay for Vice, Spike Lee for Black Klansman, Peter Farrelly. You got to go with Roma in this category because Roma is going to have a double this year that I think it'll be nominated both for foreign language and for best picture. I think it's kind of a foregone conclusion for Roma right now. And if you believe that, then Cuarón, who Roma is not nominated in any other category, they got to give it to him in this category.
A Star Is Born. I'm,
that's where you're going?
I love Roma. Cooper? I love Roma, but I think a lot of people will be turned off by Roma, especially since it's a Netflix thing. I'm looking at A Star Is Born. I think Bradley Cooper's going to surprise a lot of people this weekend.
So Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, that's at least three or four major wins. That would be huge for that film.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's going to be an Oscar nominee as well.
Yep.
All right, man, we're going to take a break right now. And we come back on the other side, it's going to be time for us to meet our filmmaker of the month. This is one of my favorite segments, man. Love talking to these guys. You guys, keep it where you got it. You're listening to The Big Show, keeping it real with Film Gordon. We'll be right back.
If you don't make me spell it out for you, all of the feelings that I got for you can't be explained, but I can try for you. Yeah, baby, don't make me spell it out for you. You keep on asking me the same questions.
Why?
And second guessing all my intentions. Should know by the way I use my compression that you got the answers to my confessions. It's like I'm powerful.
All right, and welcome back to The Big Show, keeping it real with Film Gordon. Charles and I have just been cutting up and acting crazy all show long. And yes, I am loud. It's been a long break, man. I'm back.
Happy New Year.
All righty,
new guy.
But this is one of my favorite segments that we do every month on this show, and it is our filmmaker of the month, and it is now January, of course. And this month, we salute co-filmmakers. How's that sound? Our co-filmmakers of the month, of course, are Caitlin Carroll and Brad Forder. Caitlin is the director of a film called Painted City. Ooh, I was going to say Memories because it was Memories for me. Painted City, directed by Caitlin Carroll, and also producer Brad Forder. Both of you guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you
for having us.
I think you forgot to mention the most important part.
Whether it was
husband and wife combo here.
Man, see, I'm trying to why cloud it? Cloud it. That's burying the lead, man. Stop it, man.
Okay, all right.
But anyway, I had an opportunity last night to watch your documentary, and I had mixed feelings. Not that it was bad, like you did a bad job, but I'm saying mixed feelings because of the content of the story.
Yeah.
And of course, the documentary is about, forget the doctor's name, Dr.
Perry Frank.
Thank you. Dr. Mm-hmm. Perry Frank, who has made it her mission over the last 20 years to document the murals throughout the city. And when I say the city, I'm talking about the city of Washington, D.C. It was a really informative documentary, and the ironic part of it is I was driving through the city last night watching the documentary on my phone in my car as I was passing the very murals that were featured in the documentary. So I think for me, I think the bittersweet part was about how the city continues to change. And I felt her frustration in the documentary. So first and foremost, before we even get started, because we're going to talk a lot about this, is I want to find out, how does it feel being the filmmaker of the month, man? This is a huge honor. You're like the fourth one that we've had on our show.
Oh, we're so thrilled. It really is. We found the DC filmmaker community to be really supportive. So getting something like the Filmmakers of the Month together as joint recipients, we're pretty excited.
It really is. And we're kind of on, you know, the end of our festival run with the film. And right. It's just such a wonderful way to kind of wrap things up with the film. I mean, we've been very lucky to open in D.C. with the film. We premiered at the D.C. Independent Film Festival. And a couple months ago, we're at D.C. Shorts. And so it's just been such a wonderful run. So, yeah, to be Filmmakers of the Month, we're thrilled. We really appreciate it.
All right. So let's talk about this film. What interested you in highlighting Dr. Perry's journey. Dr. Perry Frank, or Dr. Frank's journey.
Yeah. Well, you were mentioning how it's bittersweet, which I think is true, and a lot of people have that reaction to seeing it, because we focused on the preservation issues that local community murals are facing in changing neighborhoods, and we did that through following Dr. Perry Frank's efforts to study and save them. She is a historian. She's an American studies scholar, and so she approaches these artworks as she wants to know everything about them, about the story behind them and the role that they have in the community. And so she documents that on her website, dcmurals.org. And that's how we originally found out about her and her project, as we came across her on the internet when we were researching some other things, and thought that project was so interesting. And to your point about it being bittersweet, we were especially struck by a section of her website called The Mural Graveyard, where she documented the murals that are no longer with us because they were torn down for whatever reasons. And we just thought that was so interesting and brought up a lot of questions for us. You know, what role did they have in the community? What did they mean? Who made them? And who got to decide what happened to them?
Well, that's a really interesting point, because one of the things I saw, there's a section toward the end of the documentary where there's a mural that's there and there's construction that's going on where apparently that mural is going to be taken down. Did she ever talk about, because I know it's not in the documentary, but with you guys, did she ever talk about how do we preserve these murals other than taking pictures of them? Is there a way that you can, I mean, I don't know, I'm just kind of spitballing, is there a way you can actually take like a piece of wall and have it preserved somewhere, or create, I mean, I'm not being funny, I'm just asking, because
and a lot of artists are creating workarounds for this, because as they're putting artwork on these buildings, they don't own the building necessarily, so what happens to that art? However, one of the artists that we followed, Byron Peck, and you'll see he has so many murals in the city, and we featured a lot of them in the film, he painted a mural of Duke Ellington on 14th Street.
Okay.
And what he did, though, he put it on panels. And so when things were starting to happen to the building, they were able to take those panels down. And hopefully one of those days, that mural of Duke Ellington will be put back up. That's what everyone's hoping right now. Yeah.
I looked at Charles. Charles has nothing. All right. But no, so I guess my question is, because we got about a minute and a half left, where can people see the film since it's not on the circuit now? Do you have it on a site? Is there some place that people can access it? I love the look on her face. She's like,
I know. Can't wait to answer this one. We encourage people to go to paintedcityfilm.com. We're hoping to set up some more community screenings in 2019. So we encourage people to check us out, sign up for the mailing list so that you can be in the know about future screenings and future ways to see it online.
Yeah, yeah. When I talk about bittersweet, I heard her message about her not being able, the city dynamics are changing and the affordability issue. And I'm like, I feel you. I mean, and it's sad how, I've been having this debate with people about the changing face of D.C., of how I've been here for 30 years and I've seen the city turn over. And this documentary, I think, really speaks to that kind of as a secondary conversation.
Yeah, we found that murals really intrigued us as an interesting lens through which to view city change. Mm-hmm. Certainly what they represent and the stories they tell, and then also when they are no longer with us. So we thought it was an interesting way to look at different neighborhoods and community change.
All right, Caitlin Carroll, Brad Forder, you guys did your thing this month. Congratulations, DC Filmmakers of the Month for the month of January.
Thank you, Tim, and thank you.
Now, where can people follow your journey, or like if they want more information on on future screenings, where can they go?
Sure, paintedcityfilm.com, and sign up for our mailing list, and you won't miss any news. We'll let you know where you can see it next.
And all right. Find our Twitter and Facebook handles on that website as well. So at Painted City Doc, and that's our handle for both Facebook and Twitter.
All right, and well, that's it for us this week. And on behalf of our producer, Jessica Sturgis, and associate producer, Charles Kirkland, as we say in closing, please see something good at the movies. Please skip what Wilson told you early in the show. That doesn't count. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you guys on the other side.